T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
When we don't make shots, we have to continue to guard, and we have to rebound, and that was a problem. When we got cold on the other end, it affected our defense, and that's got to get better. That's got to improve.
Yes, it does.
Oh, yeah, just a little.
Yeah, I second those comments by Fred Hoiberg, because they are really prone to just standing around and watching. There was a sequence, I forgot who it was, where Jabari Parker's guy got by him, missed the shot, got the ball back, and put it in, and no one's doing anything.
No one's doing anything. I played softball last night, so I missed the start of the game. I had to go back home and watch on DVR the first and second quarters. But we, after the game, after the softball game, I was, you know, scrolling through Twitter, and I saw Casey Johnson's tweet of, at this point, so something like, at this point, does Ryan Arcidiacono just play over Campaign? Is he just better? Is he just higher on the chart now than Campaign? And I thought, well, what happened? Like, did Campaign break a leg? Is he okay?
No,
he And I just got back home and I watched the first and second quarters and I thought, oh well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Well, I mean,
0-for-4.
It's easy to beat up Campaign, but it's kind of a useless thing to do at this point. They like him because he runs fast, he gets the ball up the floor, and then the ball gets back to him and he misses a shot. But it's Arcidiacono's a try-hard guy.
Yes.
I mean, he's Rusty LaRue. You know,
I'm not advocating. I just telling you what happened to me last night. You know, reading through Twitter, seeing that, going back and watching the first and second and thinking, my goodness, Casey Johnson has a point here, and it's not that. Here's the good thing. 33 minutes for Zach LaVine. He put up 30, 5 boards, 6 of 7 free. He got to the free throw line 7 times, or shot 7 free throws. You could see it from there. Can't you? I could see it from there. He had 5 turnovers, most of them, 3-4 of them, if you want to call the fourth one, most of them just on bad passes where he's trying to force it a little bit, knowing that offensively he's the guy and trying to find some. I think you could see it from there. I was impressed. I was satisfied with what I got from Zach LaVine last night.
Okay.
I think that's important. Because if, look, we were talking
again,
Will Perdue for
it's
an hour
blowout,
yesterday.
Though. What are you, down 25 at the end of 3 or whatever?
Yeah, but
it is.
I thought some of the early stuff was okay.
And all you're looking for this year are pieces to your next decent team. And he proved that what we thought, essentially, that the athleticism that we didn't see last year is back, and how much easier he moves and how much easier his offense comes when he's as athletic as he is right now. So if nothing else, in just the one game, to me, you can already say, okay, he's back to the guy that we thought he was going to be, and you can discount what you saw last year.
I thought
that's what I needed to have.
I there were way more shots in rhythm.
Yes.
Last year, everything was out of rhythm. Some of it was the minute cap and the fact that he felt he had to do things. Nothing looked properly timed last year in his game, and when his game is timed up and he's got his bounce back, that's what you paid $80 million
for. Yeah, of the very few things that they can prove this season, you know, mentioning the defense being as bad as it is, that's one thing that I thought I could get an actual solid answer on, and I'm happy to have the start to the season. I mean, it's one game, obviously, against the Sixers in a blowout, but I'm happy to see that.
My other positive is Wendell Carter Jr. is going to figure this out. He, for a 19-year-old, to step out there against Joel Embiid. I mean, he put him in the blender early. And Will Perdue was, when Will was sitting here yesterday, you know, the first thing he said about what Wendell Carter's going to have to deal with. Wendell, I have to remember. It's Wendell.
Wendell, yeah.
Wendell Carter Jr.
Those two things we have to remind ourselves about Carter Jr. Wendell, and he's 19.
Right.
All season long, worth saying every time you bring him up.
It's a 19-year-old NBA player, and you can say why he's beyond his years and all that stuff, but that's fine. He's still a 19-year-old NBA player, but he's going to be just fine.
Okay.
He's going to be a real NBA guy. I don't know about a star, but he's going to be just fine.
Does his minutes total worry you at all this season or make a mark on you this? Does he need to be 25, 27 minutes or is just sitting? Because he got 20 last night.
Okay.
Do you care just how much he gets or is it just about starting nominally and then finding situations and finding defensive matchups for him to play?
Well, when I think about that, higher minutes for him are going to be an indication he's staying out of foul trouble. That if there is a governor on his minutes, it's going to largely be because he hasn't yet learned how to defend with his feet instead of his hands. You got guys going into him, taking advantage of him physically. That his minutes are going to, in large part, going to be in his control. If he's worthy of staying on the floor and able to keep himself out there, go ahead. You're 19. You're a young man.
Yeah, I thought he did a decent enough job keeping his hands out of Joel Embiid yesterday. Not decent enough. It's still Joel Embiid. It's his idol, after all, a 25-year-old who he's worshipped since he was, I don't know, forever.
Our Bulls Talk is brought to you by Illini Care Health. You deserve quality health care. Remember to choose Illini Care Health today. Visit ChooseIlliniCare.com. Illini Care Health is a health choice Illinois plan, and the home opener is tomorrow on The Score. See?
I'm back in.
But you know what?
Now I'm back in.
I did that thing when I got in the car and I was searching for the Bulls game on the radio. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Here.
It's on The Score.
It's us.
Old habits die hard.
We have them.
I did the same thing when we got the Cubs.
Did you really?
I would turn on the old station like, what the? Where's the? Oh, yeah. We have them now.
We used to get calls over at the other. It's just, where's the game? It's over. We have it now. It's over here.
Yes,
we have it.
You can come right here.
Come on through to the spot.
Love to know your impressions of what you saw. Basically, how we're going to deal with this Bulls season. Because those of us and especially you as a Bulls fan, when you go from the Tom Thibodeau religion, the defensive religion, to this, it's really hard to change it over. If you're starting to care about the Bulls and you watch some of the personnel they have out there, some of these groups who are just on their phones, get off your phone during the game. You're out there on the floor playing NBA basketball. Get off your phone. Take your headphones off. Stop staring at your phone and pay attention to what's going on in front of you. 312-644-6767. Mark Lazarus will join us at the top of the hour, and we've got opportunities for you to win $1,000. You've got to be listening for those lucky keywords on The Score. If you could give Wendell Carter Jr. one piece of advice, what would it be?
That he's going to get his ass handed to him on a regular basis, and that don't take it personally, and realize that the great thing about this league is there's 82 games, and one game does not make or break a season. But that's the hard part, because you play with pride, you play with ego. But know that as hard as you may play, and as well as you may play a guy defensively, there's a good chance he's still going to score on you.
Embiid on a pump, on a drive, to the rim with a sidestep, floats it in with the right hand, all the way to the cup.
You just don't see seven-footers doing little sidesteps and maneuvering. Not big seven-footers like that. That was a nice move.
He's just so smooth.
He's a very talented young man.
He's just smooth.
It was a long night for the Bulls defense. Everything starts out fine. When you score 41 points in a quarter, you think, oh, man.
They did it.
It's 41-16.
Look at all those shots.
And you're like, nah, it's 41-38.
Bobby Portis couldn't miss first and second quarter. You really do, or at least I do, respect the fact that Bobby Portis grew himself into a very feasible, a very good NBA player.
Going to be a very rich one come this offseason.
You would imagine, right?
I mean, who isn't in the NBA?
Yeah, everybody gets money. You want some money? Here, take some money. Everyone's fine. The Chris Dunn is going to be, congratulations to Chris. I guess he had the baby and everything, so congratulations. Good on you. That's awesome. Get on back there and let's see a little bit of what it looks like with Dunn. I just don't know how much different, given the fact, you talked about this yesterday, given as much switching as everyone in the NBA does, given as much scoring as everyone in the NBA has, I just don't know how much one guy at that position of all places is going to matter defensively.
It can't hurt. If it keeps Cameron Payne,
it won't hurt.
The floor.
Why? I don't know that Cameron Payne needs to be kept off the floor.
Yeah, I don't think Gar wants to be wrong on that one. Even though the more you play him, the more wrong you look. You might be better off just hiding it.
He had 22 minutes last night. Ryan Arcidiacono had 28 and Blakeney had 30. And I know it's a blowout, but please.
West Side, this is Byron on The Score. Hey, Byron.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
All right. I just wanted to comment just saying I think there's going to be a lot of drinking and channel surfing when the Bulls are on because for some reason I just don't. I mean, we have great players, but they're just not adhering to what the coach's, his program is. He was great at Iowa State, but I just don't know what's just not transitioning over here with these guys.
I don't know that that's the case. Fred teaches offense. Fred works offense. I don't know how much you've added guys into this lineup, whether it's Levine, whether it's Parker, whether it's Campaign or Holiday, I guess defensively he's on. You've added guys into this lineup that don't have a defensive reputation.
No, it's not their culture. And I always tell the story about people who go back to Iowa State with Fred. We'll say, Fred, that if you ask him a question about defense, by the end of the answer, he'll be talking about offense. It's just how he's wired. He is an offensive-minded coach. It is how he thinks. It's no different than the football coach who's an offensive guy. It's the opposite of Tom Thibodeau, who all he thinks about is what can we do in the next possession to deny this team an angle, deny them a shot, or challenge something. And it's a change in culture. And he says the right things. Fred said, he said, we have to defend when our shots aren't falling. We have to defend. We have to rebound. Defensive rebounding is a component of defense, making sure a team doesn't get a second opportunity. And a lot of it, too, is not turning the ball over. Live ball turnovers end up as dunks in this league now. It's an above-the-rim league. Hmm. And you turn it over at the foul line. That thing is going the other way in a hurry. They don't have a culture that esteems the defensive side of the ball, no matter what they say. They just don't. And not every team has to. Houston Rockets were an awful defensive team and were...
Last few years, they've been good defensively.
Have the metrics shown that?
Yes, absolutely. They had Jeff Bizdelic, who he left the team this year because he wanted to spend more time with family. A lot of people think that's the reason, along with a couple of the players leaving, that they don't have a chance against the Warriors anymore. Well, if their defense has been really good.
I'm trying to think of the best example of the good team with the bad defense then. It's because the go-to was always Houston, and they've sort of changed the narrative on that with
well, recent... you can't take LeBron's Cavaliers because that doesn't count. It's LeBron.
Right.
So I think you have to remove that as an exception.
And there have been a lot of teams that essentially didn't play defense in the regular season and then did in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then because of matchups and really did, there was an example of the regular season not indicating what they were preparing to do when games started to matter late. And I forgive me for not remembering which team was this prime example of a team that really... When they wanted to, could execute defensively.
The LeBron Heat.
I was just going to say that sounds like a LeBron Heat run.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me to bear that out.
So it would be tempting, probably too tempting to do this. But as you look at the NFL and see scoring go through the roof and nobody allowed to play defense, I was looking through game scores just as we started the NBA. You know, it's been 3 days, so it's not been, you know, all that big of a sample size. But did you know that only three teams have scored under 100 points so far? The Sixers scored 87 in the opener against the Celtics and then went on to put up plenty of points. The Clippers scored 98, so that's very close to 100. And the Grizzlies had 83. Three scores have been under 100 points so far this year. Whether that pretends to something larger, I don't know. But I'm saying it because I want to check myself against comparing the NBA to the NFL and where scoring is and where it isn't. Someone is going to play, some handful of teams are going to play pretty decent defense this year. I think probably the Boston Celtics will be toward the top of that list because Brad Stevens does that sort of thing. And you're going to see the Warriors have even had better defensive ratings and numbers than a lot of people, a lot of casual NBA observers would have you believe because of the way they play offensively, because of how many possessions they'll run through.
Well, that's the thing, is there's still the narrative of because the scores have gone up that defense doesn't matter in the NBA when it matters more than ever.
It's the number of possessions. Now, if you look at teams, you just get like a 9-point lead for the Warriors might as well be a 2-point lead. If you just look at how quickly scores change. Hell, look at what happened in the Bulls game last night.
Yeah.
Look at how these things used to be. Boy, you get this thing under double digits at halftime. There's a big Doug Collins thing. You know, just talked about the psychology of it being the difference between a 9-point lead and a 12-point lead with this huge deal. It's not the case anymore. These leads, they shrink and they expand more rapidly than ever. The third quarter last night, what was it? It went from like 4-17 in a blink.
Just close the box score. The outskirts, because the Bulls had won the first 41-38, and in the third quarter, the Sixers put up 37, while the Bulls put up 18.
So the Rockets moved up. They were 18th in defensive rating, and then moved up to 7th last year. And the Warriors' worst defensive year so far in this run, their worst defensive finish in defensive rating was 11th. So still good. They've never not been pretty good.
And that was
good
last year when Draymond Green missed time.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant's one of those guys that turns on the defense in the playoffs.
That's true.
He became a rim protector in the playoffs when they needed it.
He did.
He started that last year in Oklahoma City in that series when they were up 3-1 on the Warriors.
They take turns having guys do whatever needs to be done in playoff games for them. They've always, even though they've churned through some guys on the bench, they get buy-in from a lot of that. And it's Brad Stevens has a different culture than other coaches do.
Well, it's about finding guys, at least, you know, you go through that list, and it feels to me it's about finding guys that can guard multiple positions. And I know we're in a positionless basketball now. I get that. But you're looking for guys that can guard combinations of players then, if you don't want to do the whole 3-4-4-5 thing. You know, you're looking for guys like Kevin Durant who can stay with Chris Paul for the better part of the Western Conference Finals.
It allows you to switch ball screens, and it allows you to always have a body in front, and not just a switch to get unswitched. It can give you a switch for the remainder of the possession that you feel okay about. And if you have similarly sized players and similarly skilled players, you can do that.
And that's the thing about the Bulls' defense last night is, as much as their transition defense was awful, the switches, you know, the general premise of the switch, as I understand it, Dan, and you've covered basketball a lot longer than I have, the general premise is, if you're going to go take my guy, I have to go take your guy.
So far, so good.
Yeah, so here's the second part wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to take the other guy's guy. You went out and took my guy, but I stood there and had a sandwich.
Well, and they were also doing old Spurs stuff where they were running pick and roll to get the shot for somebody uninvolved in the pick and roll. It wasn't necessarily for the ball handler or for the screener. And then you go and you take the guy who's going to help.
The Manu Powell thing where Bruce Bowen's in the corner.
Yeah, it was
deal.
For that yeah. guy the whole time. And then Covington is standing there and nobody's within 15 feet of him.
That happened 4 times.
Mark Lazarus is going to tell us all about last night's Blackhawks game and Corey Crawford's return and why Brandon Saad is bad. We'll get that all figured out next on The Score.
So talking about injury reports, what you can and can't do with them, and the 20,000, right? 20 grand Raiders had to pay the NFL for
Correct.
Jacking around with their thing. Joe Ostrowski knows a ton about numbers and a lot more than I do anyway. The quarterback move, Joe, from Tannehill to Osweiler moved at what? It was like 3.5 points, right? It went from 3.5 to 7, I think.
Yeah, midweek last week it was a 3-point spread, and it was slowly moving 3.5, then 4 once you got to Saturday, and then bam, you wake up on Sunday morning, and before any announcement, obviously people knew something in Vegas. Then it was moving to 5, then to 6,
yeah,
then to 7. Talking to some bookmakers this week, asking about the downgrade from Tannehill to Osweiler, they said it was about 3 points, which makes sense. Most of the week it was 3, and they expected to go to 6, but the money was still flowing in at 6, so that's why it ended up moving to 7.
Oh, I see.
So the books made a ton of money, because all week, public on the Bears, and the sharps were all over the Bears, too. There wasn't anybody betting on the Dolphins.
So you've got, in the report, Schefter saying that the Patriots expect Khalil Mack to play. That's got to be the next position that moves the line, but I haven't seen it go anywhere, and I have to imagine a lot of that has to do with Mack not being 100%, even if he does play.
And believe it or not, it wouldn't move it that much. I know we see him and we see the impact that he makes.
Yeah.
We saw what happened to the Bears' defense.
Half point, though? I mean, the difference between 3 and 2.5
is... I'd say a point. Okay. I'd say a point. It was 2.5 at some places yesterday.
Yeah.
So it would be about a point move. But when you're moving around 3, that means real money's coming in because of that key number.
Yeah, that's
the most
sense.
Common difference. So If he was out, which I don't expect him to be out, but he's about a point, and that's as big as it gets for non-quarterbacks.
I heard Brad Biggs this morning talking about the pride that players take in consecutive game streaks and the fact that Mac was able to finish the game. But being able to finish a game, and Hub talked about it yesterday, that sometimes once you're in the game and the blood is flowing and you're going on adrenaline, sometimes you also get a very long needle with a powerful chemical in it.
I was just
going to
say, whatever happens at halftime.
Yeah, that something goes in there to make the pain go away. But it's clear he wasn't himself. And then when you come down from that and the body's natural tendency is to try to respond by inflaming itself and swelling up to protect the area. So... don't know. We haven't seen him in a walking boot, right? We haven't seen him in any sort of compression.
I haven't heard anybody see him walking around much at all.
Biggs did. Biggs said he walked through the locker room and looked okay.
Hmm.
But then you always get to this question of...
he wasn't carried on a litter like Brian Leftwich
was. Right, but the strategic value of having 52 out there and then waiting for the Patriots to say, okay, is he himself? Do we have to go with our full contingency plan,
the Mac plan.
Of taking care of him or not, and how to judge that as the game goes on? Or at some point, do you say we're better off with a much lesser player at absolutely 100%, and we know they've used up practice time to trying to deal with the possibility that he's 100% or anywhere else on the continuum?
We're going
to
do a lot more Bears this morning, and Patrick Manley is going to join us at noon to break down the Patriots and their chances. But I keep feeling this. If Mac is there, whether he's 100% or not, you've got to get other defensive players. You've got to get the game out of Akeem Hicks that I know he stopped runs. I've got to see quarterback pressures. You've got to go after Tom Brady. You've got to not let him out of your grasp when you have him, because even he can rumble 4 yards for a touchdown.
If you're unsure about how you're allowed to tackle him.
Yes. Doesn't matter. Just pull him down. We got to get to the college slate. Pete Futak of the College Football News is going to join us next on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670. Oh, you've got stuff?
No, I'm just going to mention a chance to win $1,000. In the next segment, you are going to have that opportunity for a lucky keyword to make you rich going into the weekend.
I wasn't able to smell the money as we were getting into the break here. I'm sorry. I should smell $1,000. That's next on the Score.
You have to be a Twitter follower to appreciate that.
You guys are idiots.
Pete Futak is brought to you by Bet Chicago. For betting and fantasy football coverage, download the app today and bet for free. Never let it be said I didn't do anything for you, my good man. Hello, Pete.
Oh, you're from Pluto. You put a condo on Pluto, man. That's so awesome. You sent us that. One of my best friends in the world lives in Dubai. He used to work at William Morris Agency, and he worked in the comedic world. And his one of ones in terms of comedic geniuses is Martin Short, and that is his be-all, end-all, go-to SNL skit. And that sent us down a rabbit hole late that night after you sent that tweet out of old Martin Short and SCTV stuff. It's so good.
Before we get it, what happened was I was watching the Red Sox and Jackie Bradley Jr., and I am incapable of hearing Jackie Bradley Jr. without picturing the Martin Short albino character Jackie Rogers Jr. that goes back to a bit that he did on old SCTV years ago, Jackie Rogers Sr., and then he brought the bit to SNL, back when they gave you like 7 minutes just to indulge some
That's
sort
a
of...
10-minute skit on SNL, by the way.
It's a 10-minute sketch. It's absolutely astounding. It involves Billy Crystal in blackface. It involves Christopher Guest underplaying, and I'm about to say it, Jim Belushi is funny.
Thing absolutely works. And yes, and it also causes me to, ever since that skit came out way back in the day, I've forever called people m'lady from that. And that's part of the vernacular, and it needs to be out there more for the world. It'll make it a better place.
Yes, it was done for you, but that's not why you called.
God bless you, guys, and Bernstein.
You are here to tell us about the weekend in college football, and a lot of people are looking at Michigan State as being one that merits attention. Do you agree?
Yeah, by theory, of course, Michigan State is right in this, because what they do and their style is the type of style that can hang with a Michigan, that can beat a Penn State, but it also can get you tagged by a Northwestern or give you problems against Utah State. They slow it down, they muck it up, and it's going to be rainy. It's supposed to be 20-mile-an-hour winds. It's going to be a low-scoring game. The line is dropped because, or the total is dropped because of that. Michigan's better in every single way possible except for Jim Harbaugh being a proven winner when games get tight against Mark D'Antonio. So last week I unfortunately thought Wisconsin was going to cover and become close just on the theory that, you know what, it's Wisconsin, they're going to come through. I'm off that now. Michigan's just better. They should beat Michigan State by more than a touchdown. I'm just going to go with that because it's the correct play, even though we know Michigan State gives them problems every single year.
Meanwhile, also at 11, and what might be a better game to watch if you like the, you know, because you mentioned the weather and the fact that it's two Big Ten teams, it's the Oklahoma-TCU thing. Kyler Murray needs a rebound. Oklahoma look on the outside looking in with one loss, and I don't know how you crack the college football playoff top four that are there right now in Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Notre Dame.
Well, last weekend was the weirdest weekend I can ever remember in terms of just every. It was that weekend where everything went wrong. As long as you could survive in advance, you're all right. And what happened with that, the biggest keys there were Penn State losing and Georgia losing. Because now it really sort of, the cliche, oh, well, everything kind of works out. Well, last week it kind of did. So really, you still know the formula for the last 4 years of the college football playoff kind of holds, and that if you win your Power 5 conference championship and you go 12-1, you are going to get in the college football playoff. And what I liked about the end of that Texas game a couple weeks ago is Kyler Murray was ticked. I mean, that was a kid who, you know, he's not used to losing. He's arguably the winningest Texas high school quarterback ever. And that was a guy who, it wasn't quite the Tim Tebow promise speech, but that was kind of a, yeah, we're not doing this again. So I think they come out and drill TCU. TCU has no offense. Oklahoma fired their defensive coordinator. And with 2 weeks off, the Sooners, this is going to be the team. It's like, oh, yeah, there we go. That's the team that should be in a college football playoff. And I still think they're going to get there.
We've got a late afternoon special with NC State at number 16 at number 3, Clemson. It's a 2:30 kick. And Clemson's a 16.5-point favorite. That's a big number, but you know they're the home team. NC State's no slouch, however.
And they're a lot better. And the last couple of years, though, it's been tight. If you care about future NFL quarterbacking world, Ryan Finley's right there. He's not quite the sexy pick right now like Justin Herbert's become and some of these other guys who are in the mix to be the top quarterback off the board. But in some worlds, he is going to be at least right there for the first quarterback taken in the draft. And it's got to be all on him because NC State doesn't have a running game. Their defense is all right. He has to come up with one of those games where he is perfect, and even so, I think he's in for a long day. And then, of course, Trevor Lawrence on the other side, there's the guy who's your 2021 number one overall draft pick if he keeps progressing. But they are looking better. They destroyed Wake Forest last week. This defensive front's about to turn it on. If Clemson's Clemson, this is the game it should win without a problem. If they win this one easily, they roll because there's just nothing there in the ACC to stop them from there.
So right about this time every year, Pete, I do the Mad Max post-apocalyptic what if everything falls apart in our college football. You know, I get weird with things. And I'm looking around and thinking, okay, even in that world, Alabama's not going to lose. So let's go ahead and write that
off. Or even if they do. Let's say they lose to LSU.
Yeah, I suppose even if they do lose to LSU, you look at the other perhaps one-loss SEC teams and who could get crazy and maybe dance. If Georgia has lost its edge,
yep,
and Kentucky turns into a thing,
yes,
they beat Georgia and then make the playoff?
Well,
you're out of your damn mind.
Of course I am.
But you're not, because if they beat Georgia, look what else they got. And this is
nothing.
Where the unbalanced, weird schedule of the SEC comes into play. Kentucky doesn't play Alabama. They don't play. They play the easier teams from the West, whereas you know the Tennessees of the world just you know have to deal with you know Alabama. Florida had to deal with LSU, but they came up with a win there. But you're right, and the crazy part about this is the Georgia loss is the real massive key because now that takes out the idea that a 12-0 Georgia versus 12-0 Alabama in the SEC championship, and no matter how you want to kind of argue it the other way, if you're a Notre Dame fan, both those SEC teams would have been in. Now you're right. If Florida beats Georgia next week, then Florida's got that inside track. But if you're talking about like the pecking order of how you have to do rankings at the moment, then, yeah, it's kind of crazy. You have Texas A&M who beat Kentucky, and then Kentucky beat Florida.
Yeah,
and
when
Florida
did Kentucky get good?
They're not.
Okay.
They came up. They've got their scheme. They have no passing game. They do have some talent on the NFL side. They've got this Josh Allen kid who's going to be a top 10 overall draft pick at linebacker. He's Khalil Mack light. They do have some talent. Benny Snell, the running back who deserves to be in an MVP sort of way. They're just good, but you're right. They've got to beat Vanderbilt this weekend. Big deal. But they still have to beat Georgia. And if they do that, yeah, they're in the driver's seat to win the SEC East.
How much is Mario Cristobal at the end of the season going to hate that loss to Stanford?
It's still there for – I think they lose to Washington State this week.
You're kidding.
Washington State, that's the team no one's talking about either, but they're kind of good.
You're kidding.
Gardner Minshew is this kid who was at East Carolina. He grad transferred to Alabama, was like, oh, you know, I really want to be a coach someday, and I kind of want to learn from the best. And then he realized, wait a minute here, I'm never, ever, ever in a million years going to play. So I'm going to go to Washington State and throw the ball 5 million times and have fun. And he's been amazing. That defense has been pretty good. Washington State's only loss was in a tight battle at USC. And now they're rested. They're going to beat Oregon this week.
Can Purdue beat Ohio State?
Yeah. You know, that it's obviously Ohio State's a million times better. But that passing game for Purdue is just dangerous. And I'm kind of equating Ohio State to Georgia, where Georgia kind of went through the motions. They were just okay. They weren't very tight. They were real sloppy. And then they got tagged when everything didn't work last week. Ohio State's in that same sort of way. It's taking a little bit too much effort to get by Minnesota and get by, you know, TCU's not that great as it turns out, and they gave Ohio State a hard time. Ohio State's, again, talent-wise, they can beat Alabama. They're just not quite there in terms of a full 60-minute team. So either they come out and they win 50-3, and it's just like, okay, there's Ohio State. Or if they have that brain cramp game, yeah, Purdue has that passing game that can keep up in a shootout.
Then this weekend feels a lot more like Thunderdome than I thought. Tell me this then. Does Nebraska get off the schneid against the Golden Gophers?
Unless they come up with the weird nuclear atomic meltdown thing that they did against Northwestern last week, where they actively tried to lose that game. Yeah, Minnesota doesn't have a running game. They don't have a passing game. But Nebraska's inventing ways to commit really bad penalties when they're not supposed to. And they should
snap a grounder for no apparent reason at just the worst time.
Yeah, that's just not – Nebraska's – they're going to be good eventually next year. And this is, I think, the game they finally get off the schneid and pull off a win.
Yeah, some bold stuff from Pete Futek. Thanks as always, man.
Later, guys.
That is Pete Futek. And now it is your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is check. Text check to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is check to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Now, I've been waiting for the Midday Midway for a while, okay?
I know. I'm still stunned that he's got what? Beating the Ducks.
Yeah, he's got the Ducks going down in flames. That is shot out of the sky. I have a ghost canoe.
Okay.
A ghost canoe.
Ghost canoe.
And I have updates. I have updates on what's going on with the 77-pack of natural light in College Park, Maryland. There are some people unhappy about it. And more importantly, the latest on the missing badgers from the Quad City Zoo.
Are they still missing?
Yeah. Stay tuned to find out. I have an update on the missing badgers in the Quad Cities.
I will talk about an airport pig and one of the greatest websites you've not been to yet. That's the Midday Midway. It's next on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.